The summer of 1983 in rural Oregon held festive light, but for Teresa Peroni, it ended in horror. She vanished into the woods after a 4th of July party with her ex-boyfriend, saying nothing. For 42 years, her family clung to hope while authorities stood silent, until new DNA tests revealed the skull buried since 1997 was hers. That breakthrough ignited a reopened investigation in early 2024. Fresh testimony, modern forensic genealogy, and evidence once dormant led to a grand jury indictment in June 2025. Now at 72, her ex stands charged with murder decades later. This is a story about time's cruelty, science's redemption, and the cost of justice delayed. So if you think you've heard it all, you haven't. Hit follow on your favorite platform and leave us a comment, because the next story might just change the way you see everything. Don't miss a single twisted turn. The 4th of July, 1983, dawned like any other in Josephine County, Oregon. Warm sun, a deep blue sky, and the smell of pine riding the wind through the trees. By nightfall, the sky above Selma shimmered with red and gold fireworks. Laughter echoed down country roads. At the edge of the small community tucked deep in the woods off Illinois River Road, a group of young people gathered for a holiday party that would never be forgotten. Among them was Teresa Joanne Peroni, a 27-year-old with wide eyes, auburn curls, and a fragile but growing sense of independence. She'd been through a rough patch lately. Her relationship with Mark Sanfratello, once a whirlwind romance, had turned volatile in recent months. Friends say she'd started pulling away. She wanted peace, a fresh start. That party on July 4th was meant to be a celebration. But by midnight, Teresa would disappear into the darkness, without a word, a bag, or a goodbye, and she would never be seen alive again. They fought quietly, like they'd done this before. The party took place in a clearing surrounded by firs, a place locals called the Hollow. There were beers and coolers, someone playing music from a tape deck on the tailgate of a pickup truck, and the scent of grilled meat mixed with pine smoke in the air. Neighbors, friends, and drifters passed around food and fireworks. Everyone was relaxed, except for Teresa. She had shown up with a field of wildflowers. Teresa, at long last, was home. The case reopens, February 2024. With a confirmed identification and a homicide ruling, the Josephine County Sheriff's Office officially reopened the investigation into Teresa's death. The first order of business? Review every statement, every detail, every inconsistency, starting with the original suspect, Mark Sanfratello. Mark had lived in Chico, California for nearly 30 years. He had no serious criminal record, kept to himself, but he'd never been cleared. Back in 1983, he had refused a polygraph, refused to search for Teresa, refused to speak to her family, and most notably, he was the last person known to have seen her alive. In 2024, investigators flew to California to re-interview old acquaintances. They canvassed Mark's neighborhood, looked into his work history, re-examined witness statements from the 1983 party, and this time, they brought new science with them. Witnesses speak again. Something happens when the past catches up with the present. People talk. In 2024, detectives tracked down at least four original party attendees from that fateful night. All of them had aged, started families, moved on. But they remembered that night. And they remembered Mark. One woman recalled how uncomfortable Teresa looked during the party. She didn't want to be near him, she said. He kept circling her, whispering in her ear. It was controlling. Another admitted she saw Mark follow Teresa into the woods, then return alone minutes later, calm, smoking a cigarette. Back then, none of them had felt brave enough to come forward. Or they did, and no one listened. But now, with DNA confirmation in hand, detectives listened to every word. And with each interview, the noose around Mark Sanfratello tightened. Digital footprints and forensic technology beyond witness statements, modern investigators had something 1983 detectives didn't. Digital tools. They traced Mark's cell phone history, his employment records, even his old email accounts. They subpoenaed search histories, financial statements, GPS data from past years, and they uncovered a chilling pattern. In recent years, Mark had researched statute of limitations on murder, extradition between California and Oregon, and how long can DNA last on bone, He'd also made cash withdrawals and relocated briefly in late 2023, just months before the DNA match was confirmed. "He knew we were coming," said the lead investigator. "He felt the walls closing in." But what he didn't know was that the most damning evidence of all had never stopped whispering. It had been in a cold case freezer, waiting to be heard. Teresa's skull told the truth. DNA gave her back her name, and a team of forensic experts, fueled by decades of grief and progress, turned science into justice. The time for silence was over. Now they would knock on his door. By May 2024, after decades of waiting and 4 months of renewed investigation, the sheriff's department had what they needed: a confirmed victim, a suspicious timeline, and a suspect who had remained silent for over 40 years. What they didn't have, yet, was a smoking gun. But as modern investigators would soon learn, building a cold case isn't about dramatic breakthroughs. It's about layering the past over the present, matching forgotten details to the latest technology, and finally connecting threads once considered impossible to tie. The name at the center of it all was the same: Mark Sanfratello, the last person to see Teresa Peroni alive. Now, he wasn't just a name in an old file. He was a target. Step 1. A forensic timeline detectives returned to the very beginning, July 4th, 1983, and reconstructed Teresa's final 24 hours in meticulous detail. Using old statements, modern mapping software, and digital overlays, they recreated the party layout in the clearing off Illinois River Road, witness positions based on memory and terrain. The angle of the trail where Teresa walked off proximity to where her skull was found in 1997, forensic analysts were able to calculate that the skull had likely been deposited, not buried, about 200 yards from the last place she was seen. The terrain was steep and uneven, difficult to traverse at night without familiarity, which led to one conclusion: whoever left her there knew the land, and Mark had lived there for over 3 years at the time. Step 2. The behavioral pattern. With input from criminal psychologists, the sheriff's office began building a behavioral profile based on Mark's known history. Possessive tendencies, emotional control over Teresa, isolation tactics, as described by Teresa's sister, a documented refusal to help search for her post-incident relocation, and refusal to engage with authorities. "We didn't need him to confess," said the lead profiler. "We needed to show that everything he did aligned with someone covering a killing, not mourning a disappearance." When paired with his internet search history, especially his recent obsession with cold cases, extradition laws, and forensic limitations, his actions took on a disturbing clarity. He hadn't forgotten Teresa. He'd been checking to see if anyone else remembered. Step 3. New witnesses, old truths. A breakthrough came when investigators located a former friend of Mark's from 1984, someone who had moved to California with him. During a taped interview, this man admitted that Mark had made strange comments after the move. He said, "Back home, they think I did something, but no body, no crime." He said it like a joke. I didn't laugh. At the time, the comment didn't seem like much. But now, it was entered as a conscious awareness of a potential murder investigation, an indirect admission. Another former girlfriend came forward anonymously, revealing Mark had become increasingly paranoid in his late 50s. "He told me never to talk to cops, that they'd twist your words. He said if they ever came asking about Oregon, I should lie." This was no longer circumstantial. This was a pattern. Step 4. Building the case file. Over several weeks, the DA's office worked closely with investigators to assemble a timeline and present a probable cause file to the grand jury. Here's what was in it: confirmed identity of Teresa via DNA, last person seen with her. Mark, inconsistent statements from Mark in 1983, failure to participate in the original search, proximity of skull to location last seen. Search history linking Mark to forensic anxiety, witness statements from both past and present, statements suggesting consciousness of guilt. This wasn't enough for a conviction, but it was more than enough for an indictment, and it was time. The phone call. On the morning of June 27, 2025, a detective from Josephine County called the Butte County Sheriff's Office in California. They had a name. They had a warrant. They wanted Mark Sanfratello in custody. immediately. Authorities in Chico, California, moved quickly. Surveillance confirmed his location at a modest one-story home he had rented for the past decade. He was alone, calm, gardening when officers arrived. He didn't resist. He didn't speak. He just looked up at them and said flatly, "It's been a long time." The arrest, Mark Sanfratello, age 72, was taken into custody on June 28, 2025, and held at the Butte County Jail without bail. The charge, second-degree murder in the death of Teresa Joanne Peroni. The extradition process began that same day. Angela Peroni got the call while sitting at her kitchen table. The voice on the other end said, "We have him." I didn't know what to feel. Relief? Rage? I just dropped the phone and cried. She'd waited 42 years, and now, finally, it was happening. A family prepares. In the days following the arrest, Angela began preparing for what came next, the trial, the testimony, the reopening of wounds. "I know it won't bring her back," she said, "but at least we'll finally speak for her. She never got to finish her story, so now we will. The past can sleep for decades, but it doesn't die. Not when there are people who remember. Not when science keeps advancing. Not when justice still has breath." With Mark now behind bars and the indictment filed, the case of Teresa Joanne Peroni, once a whisper among pines, was now roaring through the courtroom halls. On June 27, 2025, after more than four decades of silence, a Josephine County grand jury convened to decide the fate of Mark Sanfratello, the man long suspected of knowing what happened to Teresa Joanne Peroni on the night she vanished in 1983. It wasn't a spectacle, no cameras, no flashing lights. Just 12 jurors in a quiet room, handed a file filled with science, statements, timelines, and a single undeniable fact. Teresa was dead, and she didn't bury herself. Their job was simple: determine whether there was enough evidence to charge Mark with murder. What they didn't know was that their decision would not only reignite a case that had once gone cold, it would break a silence that stretched across generations. The grand jury process. A grand jury isn't a trial. There's no defense attorney, no cross-examinations, no public gallery, just the prosecution and the evidence. For this case, prosecutors from Josephine County's Cold Case Task Force presented a timeline of events stretching back to 1983. Teresa's disappearance after arguing with Mark at a 4th of July party, his suspicious behavior the night she vanished and in the days after, the discovery of a skull in 1997, the DNA match confirming it belonged to Teresa, new statements from witnesses who now felt safe to speak Mark's internet history and pattern of avoiding law enforcement, his own words to a friend, "No body, no crime." When presented as a cohesive narrative, the evidence painted a chilling picture of a man who had counted on time to erase a murder. But time didn't erase it. It documented it. The jurors react. Several jurors were in their 50s and 60s, some close to Teresa's age when she vanished. A few remembered the original missing person posters. One woman told the DA after proceedings concluded, "It felt like we were finally finishing something the community started in the 80s. They listened to expert testimony from forensic anthropologists, studied satellite imagery of the terrain where the skull was found, reviewed typed statements from former friends, co-workers, and party attendees who described Teresa's growing fear of Mark in the weeks before her disappearance. They saw a pattern, not of random misfortune, but of deliberate silence. One of the most powerful pieces of evidence, the lack of any search effort by Mark Sanfratello. He didn't ask where she went. He didn't post a flyer. He didn't even pretend to care," the prosecutor said. "That isn't how someone behaves when someone they love disappears. That's how someone behaves when they already know where she is." The indictment. After just 3 hours of deliberation, the grand jury returned a decision. Indictment for second-degree murder, Oregon Penal Code. Priority 163.115, causing the death of another human being with intent, but without premeditation. The decision meant one thing: Mark Sanfratello would now stand trial for the murder of Teresa Joanne Peroni. A town reacts news spread quickly. Though many in Josephine County had moved on, there were those who had never forgotten Teresa. She'd been a waitress at the local diner, a neighbor, a friend. Her name had always been followed by a pause, a shadow. Now, people spoke her name with something different in their voices, resolution. Angela, now in her early 60s, was contacted by nearly every local news outlet. She turned down most interviews, but she gave one brief statement. "This isn't about revenge. This is about acknowledgement. My sister existed. She mattered. And we finally said that out loud, in a courtroom." Extradition from California. Back in Chico, California, Mark was served the indictment paperwork while in holding. He declined to speak to detectives. No confession, no comment, just silence. On July 1st, 2025, Oregon officials were granted full extradition rights. He was escorted by marshals to a secure transport van and driven north through the same rugged forest that once hid the truth. He arrived in Grants Pass, Oregon, on July 3rd, exactly 42 years to the day since Teresa vanished. The arraignment. Inside the Josephine County Courthouse, the gallery was filled with familiar faces, reporters, retired deputies, and citizens who had waited decades to hear someone speak her name from the bench. Mark Sanfratello entered wearing a beige jumpsuit, shackled, thin, gray hair pulled back. He looked tired, not just from the arrest, but from carrying the weight of a lie for over four decades. When asked to state his plea, his voice was barely audible, not guilty. The judge scheduled a preliminary hearing and denied bail. The courtroom was silent. Then a single sound, Angela inhaling sharply, as if she'd been holding her breath for 42 years. Reconstructing the trial ahead, the prosecution team knew they had an uphill battle. They had no eyewitness to the murder, no murder weapon, no DNA from Mark on Teresa's remains. But what they had was damning. A victim with no reason to run a skull, found within walking distance of her last known location, a suspect with a violent history and no alibi, and a timeline of calculated evasion. They planned to call nearly two dozen witnesses, forensic experts, behavioral scientists, former friends and neighbors. They had one goal, tell the story. Teresa never got to finish. Indictments don't end stories, they open doors. For the first time in 42 years, Teresa Peroni's case had a courtroom, a judge, and a jury. Justice wasn't guaranteed. But for the first time, it was possible. And as the courtroom prepared for opening arguments, one question echoed through Josephine County. What happens when silence finally speaks? July 8, 2025, Josephine County Courthouse. More than four decades after Teresa Joanne Peroni walked into the woods and vanished, the case against her ex-boyfriend, Mark Sanfratello, was finally headed to trial. In the courtroom that morning, the walls seemed to hum with tension. This wasn't just a prosecution. It was a reckoning. Teresa's family had waited 42 years, not for revenge, but for recognition. They wanted someone to say aloud what they'd known all along. She didn't disappear. She was taken. And the man who knew the truth had been walking free, aging into obscurity, while her body lay hidden in the dirt. The opening arguments. The prosecution began simply. We may not have a confession. We may not have a murder weapon. But we have something stronger. Truth told over time, piece by piece, confirmed by science and memory. They laid out their case in structured phases. Teresa's last known moments. The original investigation's gaps. The discovery and identification of her remains, the re-examination of the case with modern DNA tools. Sanfratello's behavior, statements, and online searches. New witness testimony from friends who now felt safe to speak. Their message was clear. Mark Sanfratello didn't just kill Teresa. He lived as if she never existed, until DNA made it impossible for him to hide. The defense, by contrast, leaned heavily on time. Their opening statement focused on the decay of memory, lack of physical evidence, and the risk of convicting an elderly man based on feelings and assumptions. Mr. Sanfratello is a 72-year-old man with no prior convictions, his attorney told the jury. You are being asked to judge him not for what we know, but for what we fear. The evidence unfolds. The trial lasted 8 days. And while much of it focused on facts and timelines, it was the emotional testimonies that pierced the courtroom's composure. Angela Peroni was the first to take the stand, Her voice was steady, but her hands trembled as she described the days following her sister's disappearance. We knew it wasn't right. We knew she wouldn't leave without a word, and we knew who had been following her. She spoke about the skull's discovery, the agonizing wait for answers, and the call that came in 2024. I remember the detective saying, "We found her." I've been waiting 41 years to hear that sentence. Jurors leaned forward. Some dabbed at their eyes. Then came the expert witnesses. A forensic anthropologist explained how DNA degradation was once a barrier, but not anymore. A genetic genealogist demonstrated the exact markers that linked Teresa's skull to her sister's DNA. A digital forensic analyst showed Mark's search history, including terms like, how long does DNA last on bone, and statute of limitations on old murder cases. It was cold, clinical, damning. The defense falters. The defense tried to strike back. They brought in their own witnesses, an old co-worker of Mark's, a neighbor from Chico. Each painted him as a quiet, respectful man, harmless. But under cross-examination, cracks formed. One admitted that Mark never discussed his life in Oregon. Another said he often became agitated when law enforcement was mentioned. And one revealed that Mark had once said, "You'd be surprised how many people vanish and stay gone." None of it amounted to innocence. If anything, it deepened the sense that Mark had been hiding for a very long time. In closing, the prosecution made one last appeal. "You don't need to see a gun to know a bullet killed someone. You don't need to see the blow to know someone bled. And you don't need a videotape to know that Teresa Peroni was murdered by the man who stood closest to her, who watched her walk into the woods, and who never once asked if she made it back out." Silence settled as the prosecutor turned and looked directly at the jury. "You don't need to see him do it. You just need to see who's left standing and who never came home." The verdict. After 9 hours of deliberation, the jury returned to the courtroom. Mark Sanfratello sat motionless at the defense table, his hands folded, jaw tight. The judge asked the foreperson to rise. "Has the jury reached a verdict?" "We have, Your Honor." "On the count of murder in the second degree, how do you find the defendant?" "Guilty." Angela gasped, not from shock, but from release. 42 years of silence. Broken. Sentencing. At sentencing, Mark declined to speak. He stared straight ahead as the judge read the sentence, life in prison, with the possibility of parole after 25 years. At 72, it meant one thing. He would likely die behind bars. Angela gave a statement outside the courthouse. "This wasn't justice, not really, but it's the closest we'll ever get. He took her life. We took his freedom. That's as close as we'll come to even." A closing grave. 2 weeks later, the Peroni family held a second public memorial. They placed a headstone beside Teresa's burial site. The engraving read, "Teresa Joanne Peroni, 1956-1983. She walked into the woods and never came back, but she was never truly gone. Angela placed one final item in the soil, a small folded note. On it, four words. "We found you, T. Friend, not Mark." That mattered. It was her way of saying she was done. Mark noticed. "He was watching her all night," said one witness years later, not in a jealous way, more calculating. By 10 p.m., people began noticing raised voices near the tree line, Teresa and Mark, arguing again, but not loudly, more like two people who knew exactly how to hurt each other with whispers. "He kept stepping into her space," one guest remembered. "She looked uncomfortable, like she wanted out, but didn't want to make a scene." Then Teresa stormed off, not toward the road, not back toward the cars, but deeper into the woods. Mark waited a beat, then followed. The last person to see her alive. The next person to see Teresa was Donna McElroy, a family friend who caught a glimpse of her heading past the firewood stack into the trees. "I yelled if she was okay. She kind of waved me off, said she needed a minute," Donna said later. At the time, no one thought much of it. It was a party. People wandered off all the time. But when Mark returned to the fire 15 minutes later without her, something felt off. He lit a cigarette and sat down like nothing happened, said a man named Dave, who had worked with Teresa at a diner in Cave Junction. I asked him where she went. He shrugged. No phone, no car, no bag. When dawn arrived, and Teresa still hadn't shown up, her family knew something was wrong. She wouldn't do that, said her sister, Angela Peroni. She might have needed space, sure, but vanish, without her car, her purse, her life, that wasn't her. By July 5th, the Josephine County Sheriff's Office was notified. Officers canvassed the hollow. No one had seen Teresa since the night before. The woods were searched. Dogs were brought in. Helicopters flew grid patterns over the tree line, but there was nothing. No signs of a struggle. No blood. No scream. Just nothing. A pattern of possession. Investigators quickly zeroed in on Mark, not just because he was the last person to see her, but because of their history. He didn't like losing control, Angela explained. He was charming in public, but behind closed doors, Teresa told me he could be cold, jealous, possessive. Neighbors said they often heard shouting from their cabin. Friends described Teresa showing up with unexplained bruises, brushing it off. She always said she fell, one woman remembered, but it never added up. Mark denied everything. We argued, he told deputies, but she was alive when I saw her last. She said she wanted to be alone. No arrest, no closure. Lacking a body, no charges were filed. Mark refused a polygraph. With no evidence of foul play, the case stalled. And as weeks turned into months, the world moved on. But Teresa's family didn't. Every holiday became a reminder. Every news story about a found body gave them hope and dread. Angela never stopped calling the sheriff's department. They'd say the same thing every time. Unless something new comes up, it's a cold case. A quiet man with a dark past. Mark moved away in the late 80s, changed jobs, changed states, kept his head down. But the story of Teresa followed him. Whenever her name came up, his demeanor shifted. He didn't like questions, said a former coworker in California. Once someone mentioned a news story about a missing woman, and he walked out mid-conversation. Didn't even say goodbye. Time passed, memory faded, but Teresa never left her family's minds, and neither did the question, what happened to her in those woods that night? For over four decades, Teresa's story sat like a question mark in the middle of a forest. No proof, no body, no justice. But the past doesn't stay buried forever. Because in the years ahead, science would do what emotion couldn't. It would find her, and it would bring him back into the light. July 6th, 1983, day two without Teresa. The air in the Peroni household had gone still, heavy with questions no one could answer. Teresa wasn't the type to vanish, not without a phone call, not without a trace, not without a reason. Her toothbrush was still in its holder, her favorite denim jacket still hung by the door, and her beat-up Honda Civic parked exactly where she left it, untouched. Angela Peroni, her younger sister, sat on the front porch, holding a cold cup of coffee. I just knew, she later recalled. The second night came and went, and I didn't hear from her. I knew something terrible had happened. That gut feeling, that dread that mothers and sisters know. It doesn't always come with facts, but it rarely lies. The report. When Teresa didn't return home, the morning after the 4th of July party, her family called around, friends, co-workers, neighbors. No one had seen her. She hadn't shown up for her waitress shift at the diner in Grants Pass. Her boss hadn't heard from her. Her best friend hadn't either. By mid-afternoon, Angela drove straight to the Josephine County Sheriff's Office and filed a missing persons report. The deputy on duty took the details. Name, Teresa Joanne Peroni, age, 27, height, 5'5", auburn hair, brown eyes. Last seen, evening of July 4th, 1983, near Illinois River Road. Circumstances, last spotted walking into the woods after an argument with ex-boyfriend Mark Sanfratello. The deputy nodded, wrote it down, and said what law enforcement often says in early hours. She's an adult. Maybe she just needed some time. Angela's hands balled into fists. She's not running. Someone needs to find her. The search begins. Over the next 48 hours, the sheriff's department organized a volunteer search. Locals scoured nearby trails, ravines, and creek beds. Dogs from a neighboring county were brought in to track her scent from the party site. Helicopters hovered above the thick canopy, eyes scanning for torn clothing or movement. But the forest was unforgiving. Dense underbrush swallowed paths. Rocky ledges gave way to river bends. If someone wanted to hide something, or someone, this was the place to do it. "They found nothing," said Angela. "No shoe, no purse, not even a broken branch. And still, no Teresa." The first interview with Mark deputies met with Mark Sanfratello 2 days after the report. He was calm, polite. Said he and Teresa had talked that night, but insisted she left on her own. "She told me she wanted some space," he said. "She said she was going to clear her head and walk a while." When asked why he didn't follow her or alert anyone, Mark shrugged. "She was always doing stuff like that," he claimed. "I figured she'd come back." But witnesses painted a different picture. People at the party said Mark had been edgy and territorial. One woman said Teresa looked afraid of being cornered. Another remembered seeing Mark follow her into the woods, but never saw them return together. Still, the sheriff's office had no body, no evidence of foul play, and no confession. Mark wasn't arrested. He wasn't even detained. Instead, he left town. A family fractured. The Peroni family began to crumble under the weight of waiting. Teresa's mother, Margaret, stopped cooking, stopped sleeping. She paced the hallway at night, watching for headlights in the driveway. Her father, Vincent, poured himself into fixing things around the house, things that didn't need fixing, cabinets, hinges, anything to distract him from the idea that his little girl might never come home. Angela dropped out of community college that fall. "I couldn't focus on anything else," she said. "Every noise, every knock on the door, I thought it was her, or news about her." Years later, their family photo albums would still have an empty space where Teresa's wedding photos should have been, where her children should have sat on Santa's lap, where birthdays should have been celebrated. Instead, her memory hung like a fog. The silence from law enforcement. By August 1983, the search was officially scaled back. "We exhausted all leads," a sheriff's department spokesperson told the local newspaper. "We're not ruling out foul play, but at this point, there's no physical evidence." The words stung. No physical evidence. No body. No crime scene. It was the cruelest kind of limbo. Too much uncertainty to grieve. Too little proof to prosecute. Angela kept calling. Every few months, she'd check in with the department. "Anything new?" she'd ask. "Nothing yet," they always said. She grew to hate that phrase. A cold case, year after year. By the late 1980s, Teresa's case sat in a manila folder in a back room at the sheriff's office. Mark had moved to California. No other suspects were named. No new evidence surfaced. Life, painfully, went on. But not for everyone. Angela never left Oregon, never stopped wondering. She'd visit the spot where Teresa was last seen once a year, light a candle, say her sister's name out loud. "I just wanted her to be real to someone," she whispered once, "to make sure the world didn't forget her." In 1997, 14 years after Teresa vanished, hikers found a skull off a dirt path near the Illinois River Road, just a few miles from the original search area. It was sun-bleached, weathered, unrecognizable. Police collected it, sent it for analysis. But again, no answers. No match. It was cataloged, stored in a university lab, waiting. Teresa's disappearance had become a whisper in the wind, a name on an old poster, a photo on a dusty mantle. But somewhere in Oregon's forests, the truth waited quietly beneath the soil, and so did science. Because buried in that skull was a secret, a strand of code, a sequence of truth that would one day tell the story Teresa couldn't. By the late 1990s, the name Teresa Peroni had faded from headlines, if not from memory. In small-town Oregon, time had moved on. New sheriffs had come and gone. The Hollow, once buzzing with fireworks and music on that fateful 4th of July, had grown quiet, overrun with moss and shadow. But in September of 1997, a discovery was made that should have changed everything, if only the tools to understand it had existed. Two hikers, a couple visiting from Portland, were exploring a narrow trail near Illinois River Road, less than 10 miles from the original party site. It was rugged terrain, steep slopes, thick underbrush, and no clear path. That's when they spotted something white jutting from the dirt near a tree root. At first, they thought it was an animal bone, until they realized it was a human skull. "We think it's a woman." Josephine County authorities responded quickly. The site was taped off. Forensics teams were called in. The skull was carefully extracted, documented, and bagged. No other bones were found, no clothing, no ID. Just a solitary bleached skull with faint weathering, found in the same woods Teresa had vanished in 14 years earlier. There was immediate speculation, one former deputy recalled. Everyone thought of Teresa, but we didn't have the tech to confirm it. In 1997, DNA testing existed, but it was expensive, slow, and crude by today's standards, especially in rural counties with limited budgets. The skull was sent to the University of North Texas Center for Human Identification, which had begun working with law enforcement on skeletal remains cases. Initial tests showed the skull belonged to a Caucasian woman, likely in her mid to late 20s. The age, the location, the gender, it all matched. But without a solid DNA match or dental records, it remained just that, a strong possibility. Evidence without identity, the remains, were entered into national databases. Teresa's family was notified, cautiously. They were asked to submit DNA samples for comparison, but the early results were inconclusive. "We were told not to get our hopes up," said Angela, "so we didn't. But it haunted us, because I felt it. That skull was her." Back then, DNA comparison relied on limited markers, often mitochondrial DNA passed through maternal lines. If the sample degraded, the test could be compromised. And in this case, the skull had spent over a decade in extreme seasonal conditions, heat, snow, forest decay. By the end of 1998, the skull was labeled Unidentified Female Dauber 97 CJO and moved into storage. Case status, suspicious death, no known identity, no active leads, another box on another shelf, whispers in a small town. Even as the file went cold, rumors never did. People still talked about Mark Sanfratello. He had moved to California by the early 1990s, Chico to be exact. He worked in landscaping, kept to himself, never married. But locals who remembered him had questions. "He always seemed like he was running from something," one man told reporters years later. "He never mentioned a girlfriend, never let anyone close." Angela heard the stories, too. "I used to check arrest records in California," she said, "every few months, just in case. But he was clean, like he never existed." And so the cycle continued. The doubt, the waiting, the hope that something, anything, might break open the silence. The rise of DNA forensics. By the mid-2010s, the world of forensic science began to change. Rapid advances in genetic genealogy, low-yield DNA amplification, and automated sequencing meant that old cases could suddenly speak again. Cold case units across the country began reopening files long forgotten. Rape kits, once ignored, were tested. Unidentified bodies were finally named. Families received phone calls they never thought they'd hear. And in Josephine County, someone decided it was time to look again. The skull re-examined. In February 2024, a forensic analyst working with the University of North Texas flagged unidentified female Dauber 97 CJO for retesting. A newer DNA database had been created, one that used short tandem repeat, STR analysis, Y chromosome tracing, and ancestral sequencing. The sample was rehydrated, cleaned, and run through the system again. This time, it hit. A match. The skull belonged to Teresa Joanne Peroni. 41 years after she vanished, the forest had finally given up its secret. The family gets the call. Angela still remembers the date, March 12, 2024. "It was the call I always dreaded and needed," she said. The detective said, "Angela, we've positively identified your sister's remains. The skull found in 1997 is Teresa." And I just sat there. I couldn't breathe. I couldn't cry. The family had waited decades. Now they had an answer, but no peace. Because now that they knew where Teresa was, the only question left was who put her there. the reopening of a case. With the confirmation came a cascade of action. Teresa's missing person file was officially closed. Her death was ruled a homicide. Her case was reclassified as a cold case murder investigation. The Josephine County Sheriff's Office began assembling a task force, and one name immediately resurfaced, Mark Sanfratello. He had never been arrested, never been cleared, and now that her body had been found, he was once again the prime suspect. "We knew this wouldn't end with identification," said the lead detective. "This was just the beginning." It took 41 years, a skull, and a miracle of science to confirm what Teresa's family always knew. She didn't run. She didn't disappear. She was taken. Now, with her remains finally named, the case could be chased down once more. But this time, it wasn't going to stop with hope. It was going to end with justice. In the world of forensic science, there are moments that change everything. For Josephine County, that moment came in early 2024, when a weathered skull long buried in evidence storage finally spoke. Thanks to decades of technological advancement and the growing power of DNA science, the case of Teresa Joanne Peroni, a woman who vanished on the 4th of July in 1983, was back in motion. It didn't start with a tip. It didn't start with a confession. It started with a strand of DNA. And this time, the story wouldn't fade into the woods again. How DNA found a voice. After 41 years. In 1997, when Teresa's skull was discovered near Illinois River Road, DNA testing was in its infancy. Scientists could examine only tiny fragments of genetic material. The tools were unreliable, expensive, and easily compromised by environmental exposure. But in 2024, the game had changed. A team at the University of North Texas Center for Human Identification had begun reprocessing old remains using STR analysis, a forensic DNA profiling technique that identifies individuals based on specific repeated patterns in their genetic code. Combined with new ancestral tracing databases, they could match skeletal remains to relatives who had submitted DNA to genealogy platforms or law enforcement databases, sometimes even generations removed. In Teresa's case, her sister Angela's DNA, submitted years earlier, had sat quietly in the system, waiting for the science to catch up. Now it had. What the DNA revealed. The second round of testing went deeper than anyone expected. Scientists were able to reconstruct enough of Teresa's genetic code to determine identity, a 99.9998% match to Angela Peroni's submitted DNA sample, sex and ancestry, female, Caucasian, Northern European lineage. Estimated time of death, likely within days of her disappearance in July 1983. No trauma visible on skull, no gunshot, no blunt force visible, but environmental wear could have eroded key evidence. Despite the lack of skeletal trauma, the ruling was clear: homicide by undetermined means. In other words, she had been killed, but not by an obvious weapon, possibly strangled, possibly suffocated, or left to die in isolation. There was no indication of natural death, said one forensic anthropologist. Given her age, the disappearance, and location, it was clear someone wanted her gone. The emotional toll of truth. Angela remembers holding the case file for the first time. Inside was a forensic reconstruction, a digital facial approximation of her sister's skull. "It looked like her," she said. "Older, colder, but it was her. I just held the photo and wept." The official notification brought a wave of complex grief. For over four decades, the family had lived in uncertainty. Now, the truth brought closure, but also pain. "It felt like reopening a wound that never healed," Angela said. "But now we had her. Now we could bury her properly." In April 2024, the family held a private memorial in the forest where she vanished. A simple wooden box,